Hi guys, and welcome back to Tales from Wisteria Lane, the podcast where we give you a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives. I'm Joel.
I'm Billy Ray.
And today we will be discussing Season 6, Episode 9, Would I Think of Suicide? Needless to say, this is a warning right now. This episode contains discussions of both suicide attempts and self-harm. So if any of that is triggering for you, then I would just recommend skipping this episode and moving on to the next one. So I will be doing the overview of the episode and B will be giving us his trivia this week. So what do you have for us?
So this one was written by Jason Ganzel and directed by Ken Whittingham, and it first aired on the 29th of November, 2009. So in this week, the number one song in the US was Empire State of Mind by Jay-Z and Alicia Keys, and You Are Not Alone by the X Factor finalists 2009 in the UK.
Jay-Z.
Indeed.
Oh god, You Are Not Alone. Ugh.
So on Monday the 23rd, 2009, Fela, based on the music and lyrics by Nigerian singer Fela Kuti, opened on Broadway, and the, and I'm going to pronounce this probably wrong, Maguin Dineo massacre occurred in Amputan in the Philippines. On Tuesday, the 25th, there was a flooding in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. A powerful storm brought 3 years worth of rain in 4 hours.
Jesus.
Killing over 150 people and sweeping thousands of cars away during Hajj.
Oh my god, 3 years worth of rain.
It was a pretty catastrophic week, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
So moving on from what happened in the week, which was all depressing, the title is a reference to the lyric from the song Could I Leave You from the musical Follies.
Shock.
And the international titles are as follows. The Ooh. German was Self-Defense. The Italian was A Dangerous World. The French was Lend Me Your Husband.
Okay.
And the Arabic was Suicide or Suicide? Question mark.
Okay, that's the best one.
I don't
What's
understand.
What's the difference? Are they spelt differently as well?
No.
Or is it literally just the same word? Suicide or suicide?
Literally the same.
That's like a horrible saw trap. Which one do you pick? Suicide or suicide?
And this is the 120th episode of Desperate Housewives, which also makes it the 120th episode of this podcast. 121 if you include our Kiss Before Christmas Christmas special.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't. I think that's its own separate thing.
Yeah, that's its own separate thing.
So happy 120 for the pod. And that's all I've got.
Okay. So, previously on Desperate Housewives, Gabby found out Lynette was pregnant, so Carlos is now giving her a hard time at work, but in a legal yet unethical sort of way.
Semi-legal.
Like, yeah. Catherine is struggling to get over Mike. Carl finds a way to get Bree out of her marriage to Orson, and their affair was nearly found out. Nick is considering turning himself into the police, and Emily from the coffee shop was the Fairview Strangler's latest victim.
Yeah. Two down.
Yeah. Well, one down.
Well,
Julie wasn't, well, she was a victim, but she didn't die.
Two victims in.
Yeah. So I'm just going to do the opening separately because it was quite its own little thing. So we open with Mary Alice telling us about how Emily was apparently the perfect person. So she was popular, pretty, loved by all, and her body was found the following morning by what I put as a customer, but you do find out later in the episode that it's the assistant manager, I think. And that's when word spread of the latest attack. But according to Mary Alice, this person isn't finished.
Oh dear.
So that was like the little opening we got.
And poor Emily, she wasn't as lucky as Julie.
No, she wasn't. Bless her.
But that survivor's guilt, that could be pretty heavy on poor little Julie.
Yeah, it could be.
Unless she channels it into investigative rage or like a strive to figure out who did this.
Yeah, that she could become like the Fairview Nancy Drew.
Yeah.
Come on, girl. Okay, so I'm going to start with Gabby and Lynette. I've merged them together because their stories coincide quite consistently throughout the entire thing. So, Lynette is getting ready for work and Tom has bought a Sorry I Lied gift for Lynette to give to Carlos, but she's so confident that she doesn't need it because apparently she sees herself as too valuable to the company. So when she gets to the office, she walks into a goodbye party for her because Carlos has told everyone she's transferring to Florida, and that's when she drags Carlos into her office to reiterate that she isn't going. So Carlos tells her she either takes the job or she leaves the company, as her job here has already been given to someone else. Lynette then tells Carlos he'll have to fire her if she wants to be gone, but Carlos knows that will open him up to a lawsuit, and then Carlos moves Lynette to a closet as Tim now has her office.
Maybe she should just look for another job now.
Yeah, oh, I think it's stubbornness now. Lynette's a very stubborn person.
Yeah, I mean, she kind of brought this upon herself a little bit though. Like, maybe you should just look for another job. You screwed over your boss, he found out, and he wasn't happy about it.
Yeah, boss and friend, I would like to point out. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword for Carlos. Like, not only has his employee screwed him over, but someone that he thought was his friend has also screwed him over. So yes, Lynette has done some quite bad stuff, But I don't know, just the whole moving her to this tiny closet really makes me uncomfortable.
I know, this tiny cupboard. She how does she even get her pregnant belly around the table?
I don't know. It feels like she has to climb over the table because there is literally no space on either side.
And I really want to see it.
It's probably on my box set, like a deleted scene or like a blooper or something. So Gabby comes to meet Carlos at the office for lunch and she sees Lynette in her teeny tiny office and it's awkward between the two, but Lynette asks Gabby to talk to Carlos to get him to calm down, but Gabby's still butthurt over the fact that Lynette didn't trust her enough to tell her about the pregnancy in the first place, so she won't be doing anything.
And Gabby looks so good in this red suit.
She really does.
I specifically noted it.
And to be fair, I see what Gabby's on about, but at the same time, I'm like, Gabby, this isn't about you.
But we do find out that this is Gabby's idea, so she's like, Seb, you're right.
Yeah, it is true. But Gabby does say to Lynette, like, oh, so I wasn't a good enough friend for you to tell, but now I'm apparently a good enough friend that I'm the only person that can help you in this situation.
Just let Gabby have her feelings for a minute. Mm. Let her get these digs in, and then she can forgive you when she's ready. You know?
Yeah,
that's what you do.
Sure. This is what happens, isn't
when you,
it?
When you've done wrong, you just have to let friends have their feelings, let them get a few digs in at you until they're ready to move on.
Yeah. But finally, in this scene, Lynette tells someone, Gabby, that she kept this all quiet from Carlos because of the reasons that she kept it. You know, he'd already passed someone over on a promotion because of a pregnancy. Finally, she said it. About time. We've been saying it for episodes and episodes. So Gabby storms off because she's not going to help. And then she turns back around to see sort of a sad little Lynette sharpening her pencils in her office. And Lynette and Gabby sort of share a look. And then this scene ends.
Yeah, even when you're getting back at someone or you're annoyed with them, there's only so much you can do until you start to feel bad for their situation.
Well, yeah. So Gabby and Carlos are in bed and Gabby's guilt is now starting to eat away at her. And so Carlos believes that a couple more days of this and then Lynette will quit, like she'll be over it. And Gabby tries to hear Carlos' side of things to see if Lynette really does deserve it. All of the issues Carlos mentioned never actually happened, but were more what ifs. Like in this scene, Carlos is like, what if she was put on bed rest? You know, what if she did this or what if she did that? Yeah, but none of that happened.
Mm.
Like these are all what ifs, Carlos.
Yeah, but they are very valid what ifs.
They are valid what ifs.
I was a little bit gagged when it turned out that it was Gabby's idea.
Mm.
I wasn't surprised after a minute of thought. I was like, well, actually, that's very Gabby. But I was like, oh, Gabby.
Yeah, you wouldn't. Carlos was like, this was your idea. You wanted to put snakes in her office. So, you know, Carlos did say to Gabby he was pleased with the work that Lynette was doing up until now. And then he tells Gabby that they are justified, but Gabby convinces Carlos to forgive Lynette because Lynette would never have hurt them intentionally. And then we cut to Tom and Lynette in bed, and Lynette is so mad that she called her lawyer and is going to be serving Carlos with papers to sue him.
Yeah. Oh, big oof. Big
it's
oof.
It's such an awkward thing. You know, Gabby's like, this gives us the chance to do something we never do, which is forgive. And then Lynette's like, you know, fucking screw her. How dare she?
Yeah, this is a really big yikes moment. Because watching this is the most interesting thing that's happened all season so far. And I was like, oh my God, the drama's ramping up.
Do you really think this is the most interesting thing?
Oh, 100%. This is one of the only things I remember from this season.
What, of Gabby, Lynette and Tom trying to sue Carlos?
I think I'm being a bit overdramatic. It's the main thing I remember from this season is the fallout between Lynette and Gabby. Mm. I think it's very interesting.
I mean, because it was clearly, you know, noticeable that this was all salvageable, but Lynette now trying to sue Carlos, I don't think is going to be salvageable. So this is the kind of crux of the matter.
We need Susan and Bree to get involved so they can bang their heads together.
Yeah.
Like, that's it, ladies. Sort it out.
Knock them together like coconuts.
Like, yeah. Donk. Like, that's enough.
Yeah. So Lynette tells Tom that Carlos is about to be served. This is the next morning. Carlos is about to be served with papers. But at the same time, Gabby comes over with gifts to apologize and hopefully get them all together to just talk about everything. They hug, and whilst that happens, Lynette's lawyer pulls up to Carlos's place and we watch him serve him papers. Lynette tries to call to stop it, but it doesn't work, and so Carlos then calls Gabby, who is once again pissed and storms off, giving Lynette's presents to the people she meets on the walk back to her place.
Oh, it's so awkward.
It's really awkward because Tom's there trying to get Lynette's attention because he can see the lawyer, and all Lynette can say is, I'm having a moment, Tom, don't ruin it.
Right, I would be like, Tom, why didn't you run over there or something?
Yeah.
Fuck.
So, oh God.
Yeah. What delicious drama.
So Lynette does run after Gabby to try and apologize and tell her that she tried to stop it, but was just protecting herself. But Gabby doesn't believe that friends do this.
Mm.
You tried to sue us. That proves you're not our friend.
Mm.
So the next morning, Carlos comes into the office to give Lynette an impossible job along with the company's lawyer. And Lynette calls out Carlos for the lack of time he's given her to do it. And then he suggests working all night, which therefore would mean Lynette missing Penny's Christmas pageant. And his aim is to clearly get Lynette to fail, therefore not doing the task efficiently and in a timely manner, so he's then able to fire her. But Lynette doesn't take this and agrees to get it all done.
Sorry, who is this HR guy? Because surely any HR guy would be like, this isn't a timely manner.
This isn't a HR guy, it's the company lawyer.
Oh yeah, that. It's not a timely manner. Surely he can see that.
I know, it's not a timely manner, but really, you know, company lawyers aren't gonna.
But you're getting sued. I don't think that this is gonna bode well for you. She should take some pictures on her phone. Just take a picture of the stack of paperwork and be like, a timely manner.
The thing is, Carlos would have spoken to the lawyer who would have said, yes, I deem this a timely manner.
Yeah.
It's clearly not a timely manner because, guys, if your boss suggests the only way you're going to get this work done is if you work all night, that therefore means it's not a timely manner because you should not be working all night.
On top of the fact that he said, I'm not going to give this job to this woman I was going to give it to because she's pregnant, which is illegal. So he should stop because he will not win this case.
But Lynette just agrees to get it all done.
Because here's the thing. What Lynette did was not morally right, but it's not some sort of legal or work-based requirement to tell your boss that you're pregnant before you get a promotion.
No.
So, Carlos, you're going to lose. You might want to calm down a little bit.
That night, Lynette has to miss Penny's pageant so she can get her job done. But Penny's really miserable about it.
Oh, I felt so bad for them, though.
Yeah.
So sad.
But Lynette changes her mind when they leave and she runs after them and thinks like, fuck the work, I'll go see my daughter in her Christmas pageant.
Good for you girl.
So the next morning, Lynette's trying to finish the work, but Carlos and the company lawyer arrive at 9 a.m. as planned to get it from her. Unfortunately, Lynette isn't finished and asks for one more hour, but they refuse to give it to her, and it is with a heavy heart that Carlos fires her.
This is actually Carlos, for me, at his best, because you know, I don't like,
you hate him.
Exactly. I don't like him, and the show acts like he's a good person, and they always push Gabby and him either back together or keep them together, but he's horrible. So now they're leaning into his villain era, his villain arc.
All right, mistress.
And it's perfect. He is such a heartless villain about it. I'm like, this is the Carlos that this show needs.
It makes me this scene makes me really sad because it just, oh my god, it just really makes my blood boil when Carlos is there like, oh, see, Lynette, if only I asked for it at 10 a.m. and not 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to terminate your employment. And then Lynette's there really sad and she's like, I was up all night on this. But she leaves because apparently Carlos is within his legal rights, according to the lawyer. And then Lynette tells him he'll regret this and she won't go quietly.
It's going to get messy.
Yes.
It's going to get messy.
So, and that ends Gabby, Carlos and Lynette's story.
Oh, it's getting very good.
It is. Very, very good. So Nick is watching the TV about Emily's attack, and this is when Angie comes in to bitch about the ineptitude of the cops, and Nick then tells Angie that he was at the coffee place and was probably Emily's last customer. They panic, thinking the cops may want to talk to Nick again and therefore run his prints, which would be bad news for them, and so Nick suggests that they get out of town before that happens, and this is when Angie refuses because she finally has a life again and she can't give it up, which I think is really sweet.
It's also not a great idea to just run off after two women have been strangled when you're the new people on the lane that everyone has already had suspicions about.
Yeah, because that just kind of solidifies it.
Yeah, I feel like they'd come after you. But poor Angie, she must literally be thinking like, why is this guy always at the scene of a crime? Why can't I get a break?
It's just really sad because Angie's there like, I feel like a normal person again. Like, I have a job and I have friends. And
right, I've got a job here. I'm arguing my neighbours.
Yeah.
I'm spying on them through windows at their husband's request.
Getting involved in their drama.
I'm like a suburban housewife now.
But Angie and Nick are both nervous that the police could come at any point. And this is when Nick tells Angie that he'd been thinking about going in and that he called the police to see if they were ready to make a deal. But Angie doesn't believe they ever will because she killed a man.
Am I right in thinking that that is new information?
That is new information, yeah. So now we know that Angie has a massive scar.
From an explosion.
The Bolands aren't their real names. Mm. And Angie seems to be lying about the fact that her mother is dead when her mother clearly isn't.
They've got big dark secrets that we don't talk about.
Yeah. So after that, sad little Danny hears this argument and goes upstairs. Danny is sad for a reason, and we will get to that.
Sad little Danny.
He's sad little Danny here. So Angie comes upstairs to moan at Danny for not cleaning up the clothes on the floor, but it turns out that he is unconscious from an attempted suicide.
Bet you feel bad about that now, don't you, Angie?
Yeah. Mm. We move to the hospital, and Danny is there, and Mona, who works there, Mona, who's the one that wasn't invited to Susan's wedding, and Susan was like, you're like a dog with a bone.
Yeah.
So that Mona. And he's there taking care of him, and she tells them both that Danny has to be kept on watch because it's standard procedure, which she's not wrong, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Nick takes this moment to apologise to Angie for calling the police and tells her it won't happen again, and then they reminisce about the day that they had to run. It turns out, we get a little bit more information in this scene, it turns out that Nick didn't have to go with them, but he chose to give up a lot so Angie didn't run alone.
Yeah, so it's nice. Nick's done a lot for Angie, but I still don't get why he's always so horrible to Danny. What's your problem?
I don't really know. Did Angie run because of Danny? Like, obviously we do know, but... I'm just putting out questions to the audience that may not know yet. So like, oh, what is it, guys?
So Nick's done some really nice things for Angie, but he's still a garbage person.
Yeah. So at some point, X amount of time later, Danny wakes up and Mona is there, really sort of like overwhelmingly too much.
A bit
in
chipper.
This scene. She's too chipper. I'm literally just like, Mitch, I've just woken up from a suicide attempt. I don't need you in my face.
But Mona's a nurse. She's probably on her third coffee.
Probably, that's true, so. Probably. And she's there like, I told your parents I'd take real good care of you. She's not Southern, and she doesn't talk like Dolly Parton, but I don't know why I did that accent.
It's fine, we'll roll with it.
And she calls him Danny, but he corrects her, telling her that his name isn't Danny, it's Tyler.
Mm.
And then that ends that storyline.
Well, it ends with Ms. Mona here acting all shocked or worried or concerned. But I was like, girl, he's just woken up after a suicide attempt. There is a chance that he's not in his best mental state. Why are we taking it so seriously?
Yeah, like it could literally be his middle name.
I would have been like, yeah, sure thing. And then just been like, I'll be back with your water.
Yeah, all right. See you in a bit, Tyler.
Back in a bit, tea.
Yeah.
But she's acting very serious about
she,
it.
She is acting very serious. So I think we need to keep an eye on this Mona chick.
Mm.
So Bree starts the episode somewhere povo, and it turns out she's meeting up with Lamar, who's a prison friend of Orson's, and she tries to convince him to sort of meet Orson. I would like to say this dude is hot. Not like hot because he's like visually like, oh my god, damn, I must have him, but hot because he's able to open up a can of beer in the same hand that he's holding it.
Yeah, he opens it in one hand.
Yeah.
Without even looking. And it was really cool.
I was just like, oh god, I love my basement.
I was like, is it meant to be cool or is it meant to be like threatening? Because Bree's like, oh my god, the poor people, they're so savage.
I don't
wasn't really sure what it was supposed to be, but I thought it was cool.
I thought it was really cool, yeah.
Also, like, Bree walking through this nasty looking building waving hesitantly at the guy drinking on the floor was quite funny.
Oh, well, Bree walking through any pop-up area is just funny.
Yeah.
But you'd think with all that time in the motel, she'd kind of be used to it by now.
Yeah, there's no humbling her.
There really isn't any humbling her. So apparently, Orson has spoken quite fondly about Lamar, and Bree wants him to help cheer Orson up, but by coming over to see him. And Lamar refuses at first due to the possibility that he could be caught breaking parole and going back to jail. But Bree assures him that it would all be secret, and then she offers him money, which kind of gets his interest. And then she offers him a bit more when he turns up, and that's when he agrees yes.
Yes, and for a laugh, we get to hear some horrifying prison stories. Poor Orson.
Flossie.
Yeah, apparently someone used floss to strangle a guard, and then it was never allowed again. And apparently there was a riot, and Orson was used as like a shield, human shield.
Yeah, he was like, he seemed pretty mad at me when I used him as a shield in that prison yard fight.
Oh, now he just laughs and laughs about that. But I was just like, these are quite horrific stories.
Yeah, but...
just used for a laugh.
Stories in prison are always the fun ones. I'm sure they're not fun for...
Like that comedy show, Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, I know.
Mm. But it's fine because we don't like Orson anyway.
No, not really. So Carl and Bree have met up at the motel, but before they get going, Bree is firm with Carl that these pictures are only for blackmail, and even if Orson does call Bree's bluff, they will not be sending him to jail. And then Carl eventually agrees, and that's when they get it on.
Well, then what's the point? At least if you send him to jail, he's gone, he's out of your life.
Yeah, but Bree doesn't want to do that because that's too harsh. What she wants to do is essentially say, I'm blackmailing you here. If you do not let me divorce you, I will then send you to jail.
But it's not too harsh. She's his prisoner. She's wrong. Arrest him.
Shoot him.
Shoot him.
So that's Bree's storyline right there. Just a little short one. Bree is more involved in Susan, so we'll get to that.
Yes.
So all the women have met up, and I say all the women, and Mona is there for some reason. Because she's in this episode for Angie's bit, I guess they just sort of brought her into this scene. So they're there to discuss the latest events, and Mona suggests a self-defense class, and then Bree pulls out a gun claiming she doesn't need it. And this is when Julie walks in and Karen, or because even Karen's here, offers Julie the opportunity to go with them. But she's a real downer and she tells everyone that she was attacked from behind, so self-defense isn't always that helpful.
Yeah, she said that and I was a bit like, no offense, Julie, but it's not all about you.
Yeah, I know.
I know that you're saying that someone got you from behind and so if they want to get you, they can. But maybe if you did take a self-defense class, you could have like thrown them over your shoulder into the bin or something.
Yeah.
But either way, she's got trauma, so.
She does have trauma. And to a certain extent, she's not wrong. Like if a person wants to get you, they'll do anything they can to get you. A self-defense class can only take you so far. However, girl,
if she did do a self-defense class, maybe she would have been okay. So I don't think it's a bad idea.
No, it's not a bad idea at all, because even just a little bit of help or training on this is a good thing to have. And it's a sad thing that we are in a world where women all over the world feel like it's a necessary thing to have and in their back pocket is sort of experience and self-defense.
Right, self-defense, weapons, learning when you can and can't walk home and what you can and can't wear.
Yeah.
Put your keys in between your fingers in your pocket to get ready for a punch.
You know, second guessing whether it's a safe bet to walk down that alley or take the long way home.
What you should do is just go limp. Like, just drop your body, dead weight.
Yeah, that's what I do. I pretend someone, to be dead.
Like, don't even try and fight them off. Just like, dead weight yourself. And then they're like, oh, fuck.
I do that with B when he fights me.
And then they'll be like...
I dead weight on top of him, and then he can't fight because I'm too heavy.
The murderer will be like, oh, I thought this was a human. It's just a doll.
It's a mannequin. I just pretend to be a mannequin.
But if you dead weight yourself and fall, like, it's going to be really hard for them. So.
Yeah. So Susan goes to check on Julie and try to convince her to go to the police about her affair, as the likelihood is that whoever attacked Emily also attacked Julie. But Julie still refuses to do so because she doesn't believe that Nick could hurt anyone. Not that Susan knows it's Nick.
No offense, Julie. I'm getting sick of this notion.
Yeah, I know, me too.
Stop saying it couldn't possibly be Nick. He sucks.
Susan takes Julie's word for it, and then Julie chimes in with a comment about why he would attack her when he wanted to then get back together, which then annoys Susan, and then she wishes that they could just go back to when Julie was 7.
Well, I had to grow up at some point, Mom. I'm sorry I grew up.
Me too. But, you know, all Julie did say in this scene was, why would he attack me and then ask to get back together? And then Susan's the one that's like, are you seeing him again?
But I'd be like, maybe he would attack you because you didn't want to get back with him or because you called it off. Use your freaking brain.
Yeah, I know.
You're supposed to be smart. You went to med school.
It was Julie that said, I'm not seeing him again, but even if I was, it's my life. So that's probably what made Susan go, okay, you're seeing him again.
Right. She's like, it's is my life, Mom.
It is my life.
Leave it be. No regrets.
So Julie is a 23-year-old girl, and in this scene, she's calling Carl daddy. And I think that's just too old to be legitimately calling your dad daddy.
Yeah, it's weird when upper-class English people do it. Why are you doing it?
Yeah, it's weird when they say mummy as well.
Ugh.
So Carl comes over to try and cheer Julie up, who apparently can't stop thinking about Nick, and is worried that because he knows her car and her address, that she will be, you know, followed if she goes anywhere. Carl offers to swap cars with Julie for a while if it makes her feel a bit better, which they do, which leads us in to the next scene.
After making sure that her car has aircon.
Yes, that's true.
This was really nice of him, though.
It was really nice. Well, he's, you know, at the end of the day, he is still her dad. You know, that's his little girl.
Yeah.
So Susan is driving along and she notices Julie's car in a motel car park, assuming that she is there reigniting the affair with the married man. And so she pulls up and she gives Julie a ring and we have a clip.
Hello.
Hi, it's your mother. Am I interrupting anything?
Nope, I'm just at the library.
Oh, really? The library.
Yeah, I thought I'd dive into an old favorite.
And vice versa, I'm sure.
Huh?
Honey, I don't blame you. You've gone back to that place because it seems safe and comforting. Am I right?
I guess.
But trust me, it's a bad idea.
Can we talk about this later? I only have an hour and I really want to finish.
Okay, I want you out of there right now.
Mom, I'll see you soon.
Oh my God.
Can we talk about this later? I've only got an hour and I really want to finish.
It's a classic Desperate Housewives misunderstanding.
We always seem to do those as clips.
It's because they're very funny. And
they're so good.
It's the show at its best when it comes to humor, other than when Gabby does anything.
Yeah. It's clear to see that in this clip, Julie is at the library. If you watch the episode, she is there. We see that. And obviously Susan believes that she's having the affair, and then innuendo.
Yeah, because obviously it's Carl borrowing Julie's car.
Yeah, which links to the motel scene that we discussed in Bree's scene a little bit.
But I've only got an hour and I want to finish when she's like only halfway through Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, that's true. And because you mentioned it, Bea mentioned this right before we started recording the episode. So I quickly did a Google search of who is the world's fastest reader.
Okay.
Because I was like, oh, who is the world's fastest reader? What is it? So Howard Berg is considered the fastest reader in the world and the Guinness World Book record holder. The Guinness World Record Book recognized Berg in 1990 for his ability to read more than 25,000 words per minute and write more than 100 words per minute.
They must have like an industrial keyboard or something for that.
I've got no idea how they could actually monitor the fact that he legitimately read 25,000 words in a minute.
Yeah, maybe he has to give like a brief summary of what he read.
Maybe, yeah.
It is impressive, but I did read the first Game of Thrones book in a week, so I reckon... Like,
oh, okay, you clearly are the record holder now. Sorry, Howard Berg, better hand over your crown and scepter.
Well, I reckon I've got him beat. It's like over 500 or 600 pages. It's quite a long book.
I read, what, three of the series Unfortunate Events books in a day?
Well...
So I actually, maybe it should be me that's holding that crown.
Okay. I'll pass down the trophy to you.
So anyway, Julie is no Howard Berg, and the fact that she sat there at a library, I might add, which does let you take books home with you, saying that she wants to finish her book.
Also, it's very wholesome that she goes to libraries and reads in the library and stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's very like you.
Vintage.
It's very you energy.
Me?
Not you, but the TV show you.
Oh, there's a TV show about me?
No, not you.
Not me? No, just not said you.
Yeah. I swear to God, why are you being so difficult? So obviously the scene ends with Julie hanging up on her mum because her mum's being weird. And so Susan decides to go up to the room to stop her daughter making a mistake, which actually, if this was Julie, would be creepy. But
I guess just bang on the door.
Yeah. Susan bumps into a housekeeper who tells Susan what room they're in. And apparently Julie's a redhead. Yeah, Julie a redhead?
She is at the moment, yeah. After she says, the redhead's my daughter, and the cleaner goes, damn, yeah, right. You look good. Because obviously the cleaner thinks she's talking about Bree.
Right? That must have made Susan feel great.
Right?
Just that sort of, yeah, I bet that made her feel great.
So, right.
Susan peeps through the window and sees it's Carl and Bree in the room, not Julie. Or she assumes that Julie and Carl are getting it on, but that would be a little bit weird.
Well, I did write a note about that. I thought... I was worried they might try and do some weird story where Susan thinks that Carl is getting it on with Julie or something.
I think that's a bit too gross for Desperate Housewives.
It would have been too weird. It would have been like that Friends episode where Monica thinks that Chandler's into whales or something.
Shark porn. Yeah. Can I watch a shark porn? Do you want me to get in the bathtub and thrash?
I mean, they can't all be gems.
So, Danny Porter? Is it Porter that's the twin that's still here? I can't remember.
Twin one.
Danny, one of the twins, Anna and Eddie are all talking about Emily and how sad it is that she's died. She died. Julie comes along and Eddie leaves to go home because his mum is majorly freaked out, and Porter gives Eddie a ride. And then Anna goes to leave with Danny, but Danny wants to stay and talk to Julie, kind of blowing Anna off.
Yeah, she didn't look very happy about that.
She really didn't.
He's like, I just kind of want to talk to Julie alone. And she's just like, oh, that's F.
Boo, you whore. Danny tries to convince Julie to go and eat with him, but Julie tells him that they can't go out, not because she's 23 and he's still in college, which is, you know, a legitimate reason, I'd say, but for other reasons. And then Danny tells her that he knows she slept with his dad and he doesn't care because he likes her. And then Julie tells Danny that they will never be together because that's just weird, and then leaves. And then Danny goes to find a bench and has a sad, lonely cry.
I mean, at least she acknowledges that that would be strange.
Yeah.
But also, Danny, the begging, it's not cute.
Because Danny's in college, right?
I think so.
Oh, but then college is uni, isn't it, in America?
Yeah, so it's not, you'd have to at least be 18 or 19.
Yeah, so it's not actually, the age difference isn't actually as bad as I'm thinking about.
But still, the begging is not cute, Danny.
No, it's really not.
Let's stop that now.
At the self-defense class, all the ladies are there getting ready to attack each other. But the main focal point is Bree and Susan.
Mm-hmm.
And Susan gets to attack Bree first, and she's apparently taking it a bit too far. And Susan tells Bree that she knows about her and Carl. And then they have to switch. So Bree gets to attack Susan and have her moment. But then Bree takes it too far and stops Susan from being able to breathe. And then she tells Susan that Orson has put her through hell. but what she has with Carl was, you know, more than just a fling, and she has no intention of giving him up, and then she storms out of the self-defense class.
Yeah, I think I've done enough of defending myself for a day.
Right.
They like, they strangled each other to death.
Yeah, I know. Taking it a little bit too far, but what do you expect from Susan when she reacted this way with Catherine and Mike?
Yeah, she shot a woman. Be careful.
Yeah, I know. Really do need to be careful. Then Susan calls Carl and Bree to her so that she can give Bree a little insight into the real Carl Meyer.
Oh, it's so good.
Apparently, Carl forgot Susan's 30th birthday, spent their 10th anniversary at a strip club, and for his 35th birthday, he wanted a threesome, which is apparently a real disgusting thing for Susan, but really, it's not in the grand scheme of things, it's really not that bad. At least he asked to bring a third person into the bedroom.
Yeah, I feel like that really aged.
Yeah.
That aged poorly, that moment.
Yeah.
Because of the whole, he wanted to bring someone into the bedroom. It's like, well, he asked. I mean...
Yeah, I know.
At least he's asking. He wants to explore some things.
It's a legitimate thing. Some people out there do like that. And how are you going to get that without asking? You have to ask. So it's not a shocker that he asked. So even with all of this information, Bree tells Susan that she still believes in Carl when he says he wants to change, and she lets slip that she loves him, which gags everyone.
Yeah,
and
the L word.
Yeah, she did. She said the L word. She dropped the bomb. Isn't that what you're supposed to do when you love someone?
Right.
But Susan gives her blessing to the relationship if they do really love each other.
Yeah, it will happen very quickly. I thought it would last a few more episodes.
Mm. I guess it's because Susan's over Carl, and so she can kind of get over the fact that he's with someone else, as opposed to Mike, who she was never over. So that's why she took it so much harder with Catherine and Mike.
Yeah, it was nice. It was a nice ending.
So I've left Catherine till last because it's not too long, and it's kind of a gaggy.
It's kind of the story. Ending of the episode anyway.
It is. So Catherine is depressed on the porch, and MJ comes over and asks how she is. And she tells MJ he wouldn't understand, and as he goes to leave, she kind of calls him back, and she's like, no, wait, I was just kidding. Like, come back, I really want to talk to someone.
MJ's so sweet.
He's so sweet.
The fact that he goes over and he's like, what's wrong with you? And just asks.
He's just so nice, and he just wants people to be happy. He's such a kind soul.
And Catherine took care of him, so they've got a connection.
A little bond, so...
MJ's... I mean, this is so different from the MJ that dropped a bowling ball on her foot on purpose.
Oh, yeah, we've really gone far from that little MJ.
Mm.
So MJ's conversation with Catherine has clearly made him depressed, and he tells Mike that he's worried about her because she's old and it's hard to meet men when you get older.
Yeah.
Apparently, Catherine also said to MJ that Susan stole Mike from her, and so that means Susan's a bad person.
Yeah, Catherine.
And this is where it starts to... I mean, we've had bad Catherine, but this is like a whole other level now because she's playing mind games of a child.
What did she think would come from this?
I have no idea.
Stupid.
She's not thinking rationally, let's face it. So Mike reassures MJ that his mum is a lovely person, and then he goes storming over to Catherine, who is gardening, and he like steps on one of her flowers, and then Catherine's like, Mike, watch it.
Yeah, stomping over our hydrangeas or whatever they are.
Gulliver over here. Oh no, wait, Gulliver's the small one, isn't it? Well, is Gulliver the giant?
Well, Gulliver is in regular land, a small land, and a big land, so at one point he is a giant.
Oh, okay. So he moans at her for bringing MJ into this whole drama of the three of them, and tells Catherine that if she talks to his son one more time, then she'll really see him angry. And as he goes to leave, she sort of apologizes, but she was probably a little bit too turned on in the moment to really think straight.
I mean, Mr. Denton is quite good at acting angry.
He is. And when he's there like, you really don't want to see me angry, I was there like, oh, try me.
I knew you were gonna say that. I just knew it when I saw the episode. Anyway, yeah, he's quite good at acting angry.
Which is nice
because he has very little to do other than that.
Yeah. Mike comes to pick MJ up from a birthday party, but it turns out Catherine has already picked up MJ. And so Mike jumps into the car, and the parent left standing there is like, did I do something wrong?
Yes, like, obviously you did.
Yes, you absolutely did. You handed over my child to someone else. And if I wanted someone else to pick up my child, I would have said to you when I dropped him off, so-and-so is going to come pick him up.
It would have been funny if this was a birthday party that Mona was throwing, and she was like, well, how am I supposed to know that things didn't go well at the wedding? I wasn't invited.
Yeah, I know, right? God take Mona, you're like a duck with a bone.
I so wish that happened.
Anyway, moving on. Mike runs over to Catherine's, and MJ is there, ready to eat whatever it was that Catherine was serving. Mike tells MJ to go home, so he's alone with Catherine, and that's when she tells Mike that MJ deserves to know the truth, that Susan lies to him, and that what they had was real. And Mike takes this moment to tell Catherine that it was all a lie and he was thinking of Susan every moment. And Dana Delany is such a good actress. Like, you could see the pain when he said that, like, in her eyes.
Yeah. Well, it's not your business, lady. It's not your kid.
No, it's not your kid.
Also, they could have had a nice ongoing relationship, but she's just been so erratic. She's ruined it for herself.
Yeah. Catherine picks up the knife and tells Mike to kill her then because it would be less painful. And then Mike grabs the knife off of her and tells her that he doesn't care enough about her to kill her. And that's when he throws the knife down on the side and leaves.
He really shouldn't have touched the knife at all. He should have just left.
I know he should have just left, but at the same time, I would have essentially just said, when I'm called in for questioning, because let's face it, I'm getting it called in for questioning, I would literally be like, well, I did live here. My fingerprints are going to be everywhere.
No, because that wouldn't check out with Catherine's housekeeping skills, would it?
Yeah, but what's she doing? Like, cleaning everything with bleach? No.
Well, when you wash up a knife, the handprints aren't going to be there anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that simple?
Yeah, have you not seen people just wipe them clean with like cloth and stuff when they're getting rid of fingerprints in films?
Yeah, but I've never believed that was actually legitimate.
Of course it's legitimate. Why would the fingerprints just stay on it if you wash it?
I don't know. I've never really questioned it. I've had no reason to question it. Why are you questioning it?
You're the one questioning it.
I'm not the one questioning it. You're the one like, oh, well, no, all you have to do is this. Why have you been researching how you eliminate fingerprints?
I haven't. I read enough books to know that it's a thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure. Use the books. Guys, if it's another voice next week, call for help.
Oh, please. Your friends would get me arrested right away.
Yeah, I know.
Even if you just went missing.
So we move on to the ending, and Mary Alice tells us how the world is a dangerous place, and we see Julie alone in the car park looking very nervous, Lynette packing up her things at the office, Orson meeting with Lamar, and finally Catherine calling for an ambulance because she's losing a lot of blood, and then she hangs up, picks up the knife, and we can assume she stabs herself. We see it off camera, but you know, you hear a thud, you hear a gasp, and then she puts the knife down on the side and there's blood all over it.
I think she should have done it before she called for the ambulance, so that not only because it'd be more prominent in your voice that you've been hurt, but also what if you pussied out and then they just show up and you're like, oh, I'm sorry, I thought I'd hurt myself, but I just stubbed my toe and I thought I was gonna die.
No, I guess it's because you kind of have to go through with it afterwards.
Yeah, like, you should have just gone through with it first in case you couldn't do it.
Probably because she didn't want to run the risk of like passing out from blood loss or the pain. And so she couldn't then call the ambulance. Like, she stabs herself. She's like, right, now I'll call the... And then she just collapses.
This is absolute character assassination of Catherine.
It really is. This is the worst thing. Now, this is it. This is when we've been talking about character assassination of Catherine all this time. This is the moment. The moment of character assassination we're on about.
Why have they done this? Catherine was so cool. She got onto the lane, gorgeous as anything.
Gave Bree a run for her money.
Yeah, she was a rival. And then she helped Bree through her whole thing. She was also an abuse victim who overcame that. Powerful stuff. And now, guys, honestly.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, they've done Catherine dirty for ages. Catherine comes onto the lane. She's fierce, fabulous, fun, gives Bree a run for her money, starts a business with Bree. Bree screws her over and takes over the business, and Catherine's just there working for it. And then all of a sudden, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, Bree drove her mad.
Bree probably did. This was probably when it started.
Yeah.
That was the episode.
Yeah.
It was the episode, guys. It was very dramatic.
Now we move on to Joel's segment for gayest and straightest moments, starting with the gayest moment.
So my award for gayest moment. I'm going to give it to Danny for crying on a park bench.
Why?
I don't know. That's the only one I could think of. There wasn't really any gay moment in this episode, I think.
That's fine. If that's what struck you, that's what it'd be. And then what do you have for straightest moment?
My award for straightest moment goes to Lamar for opening his beer with one hand.
So cool.
You couldn't get straight in that.
Didn't even look.
I had it when I was watching the episode at home. I had a can of Pepsi there and I tried to do it myself.
I can't even open. I need two hands.
I couldn't do it. I was too scared I was going to drop it. I chickened out. And now we move on to B's awards for best and worst parent. So who do you have for the best parent, babe?
My award for
best parent of the episode.
I think this might be the first time I've ever done this, and it will probably be the last time I ever do this, but I'm giving it to Carl.
Aww.
For the car swap.
Yes.
He swapped his super nice bastard lawyer car for Julie's teeny little car, which is a miracle that even has air conditioning.
I genuinely...
So that she could be safe.
Genuinely thought you would give it to Lynette.
Because of the whole going to the pageant.
Losing her job so she could go to Penny's pageant.
It was close.
So yeah, so who do you have for worst parent of the episode?
No.
You don't have anyone?
No, I don't.
There wasn't really much bad parenting, really.
No, I didn't see much, to be honest. And I was trying to think of some way to give it to Nick, but nothing happened.
Fine, I will hand it out on your behalf. I will give it to the woman who was hosting whatever birthday party MJ was at.
No, that's okay, because I would do the same thing in her shoes. So we won't give it to her.
You absolutely will not. You are not allowed to host a birthday party when we have children without me there.
It depends on the child, okay?
It doesn't depend on the child.
What, you wouldn't rank certain children that you like above the others?
Of course I'll rank them. Absolutely, I'll rank my children's friends. But not my friend's children. My children's friends. I will rank them. I won't just hand them out to people as party gifts at the end of a...
No, you do mean your friend's children.
I mean, I'll rank them
Not too. Your children's friends. Anyway.
You're a horrid person.
So those are all the awards. Bravo, yeah. Bravo. Fucking bravo, guys. So that was the end of the episode. That was season 6, episode 9, Would I Think of Suicide? So if anyone has any questions, queries, comments or theories, where can they find us and where can they message us about such things?
You can find us on Instagram at boyfriendsreview and you can find us on Twitter at BFSreview.
Our email is boyfriendsreview@outlook.com and the artwork is done by our friend Louis, who you can find on Instagram at docredbunkdesign. Which has an Etsy link, because he does commissions.
Yes.
You can also leave us a review on any app podcast provider where you listen to this. And we'll be back in your ear holes next time with season 6, episode 10, Boom Crunch.
Yes. The mid-season finale disaster episode.
Oh, finally a disaster episode. So we'll be back next week to judge the shit out of it.
Yeah. Bye, guys.
Bye.